I think that people really want high-touch, customized experiences. As more and more becomes available just on Google and on YouTube, if you don't have these kinds of value add where you're helping people either through private coaching, done-for-you services, done-with-you services, whatever it happens to be, customizing programs to them, I think people are not going to be spending top dollar for content they could just rip off the web.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is the producer, Darren Clark, and we are so happy you've tuned in with us today for Roland's conversation with Marisa Murgatroyd. Marisa has an extensive track record of helping coaches and entrepreneurs to stand out, become visible, and attract a passionate tribe. For the past 5 years, she's been providing branding solutions to 6, 7, and even 8-figure entrepreneurs while building her personal online company, Live Your Message, from 0 to 1.5 million. So let's dive in. But first, hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Our episodes drop on Mondays and Wednesdays with high-level entrepreneurs sharing their strategies, stories, and mindset.
Hey, this is Roland Frazier, and I'm here today with Business Lunch with my wonderful guest, Marisa Murgatroyd from Live Your Message. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you for trekking down from LA.
LA, not too far.
Not too bad. Not too bad. So before we kind of dive into things, can you give everybody just an overview of what Live Your Message is and kind of what you do right now?
Absolutely. Well, I like to say that we turn everyday entrepreneurs into online superheroes so they can change the world from their living room.
Nice.
And we primarily do that through online education.
Okay.
One of the core things that we teach is how to get more people to complete their programs and products and services and get results. So to really engage with their offers.
So you help other people who have programs to get people to go through them and learn whatever it is they're supposed to learn from them?
Yeah, and it sounds like that's optional, but the truth is that when you can get people completely hooked on your products, the lifetime customer value goes up, refunds go way down, you have people referring you like crazy, you have testimonials and case studies out the wazoo, you make more front-end sales based on reputation, and it becomes a lot more fun to deliver your work because you know people are getting super engaged. They're going through, they're completing, they're getting results. And the dirty secret is that in traditional online education, which is a $200 billion a year industry, soon to be a $325 billion a year industry, it's well known that the dirty secret of that industry is that up to 97% of people who buy information products and online courses do not finish those programs and get results.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So would we call it kind of a consumption and adoption type business?
You could call it a consumption business. The real thing I would say is that a lot of people think that the most important moment in your relationship with a customer is the moment they buy from you. And I'd actually argue it's the moment right after they buy. What happens? How do you fulfill on your promises? Mm-hmm. How do you start to deliver on their expectations and create an extraordinary experience that gets them taking action and ultimately gets them talking about you?
That's really cool. So would that be different from retention? Because I know there are people that kind of specialize in retention. It sounds like it
is. Yeah. Well, retention is getting people to stick in your programs. But what I'm really interested in is how do you get people completely hooked on achieving their biggest goals in life and overcoming their greatest challenges through your programs.
So give me an example of a program that somebody came to you, a client, and you helped them do this. Tell us kind of how that worked.
Absolutely. So one example of an existing program where someone came to me with an existing program, a lot of people come to me with new programs they're about to launch, but we had Josh Turner come with the Appointment Generator.
Okay.
And this is a program that does, you know, I think $2-4 million a year in sales. And they just wanted to deliver a better program. They already were getting a lot of sales, and they said, well, what can we do? And so I worked with his team to create some gamification, to create some contests, to redo their membership site, to redo some of their fulfillment sequences. And one tangible benefit is their refund rate went down from double digits to single digits. So instantaneously, that left an extra $100,000 or $200,000 in their bank account.
Nice. So then it sounds kind of, and I apologize for not, I'm trying to obviously put a label on it, but I know that we've been working a lot lately on our customer experience. It sounds like it's really more comprehensive even than just consumption. It's the entire customer experience that you're working
with. It's the entire customer experience, soup to nuts.
Yeah. Yes. And I've been on this a lot lately. So I think it's people will pay 13 to 18% more for a better customer experience. More importantly, it's something like 56% of the people will leave a brand that they absolutely love because of one poor customer experience.
I actually heard that number was 80%.
Yeah, that's
just 80% of customers are lost based on a single interaction and a single touch point.
Yeah.
But the other interesting phenomenon is, well, there's a couple trends that are happening in the market that kind of play into the need to do this. Mm-hmm. One is that everything that I've ever created, probably everything that you've ever created, has been ripped off and is being redistributed online illegally. And we recently did a scam. There were over 600, I think 31 sites and links selling our programs or distributing it for free.
Well, this is fantastic. So now everyone who's watching and listening can have everything for free. You're welcome.
I know. But the thing is that if all I was giving is, say, videos or trainings, people could rip me off.
Right.
But they cannot rip off the coaching, the customer experience, everything that happens in the program that goes beyond the core curriculum and the core content.
Yeah. I think that's a really excellent point. That is something that we experienced at Digital Marketer too. Yeah. People were stealing our stuff and selling it for significantly less under group buys and all kinds of other things. And you can't really, it's whack-a-mole with PayPal, with Chinese accounts and all this other stuff. So it's not worth your time to me to go chasing after that. It's worth your time to design an unstealable customer experience.
Exactly.
And the people who are going to steal it are going to steal it. They can have the content, but they can't duplicate the experience. So let's talk about how you do that.
Yeah. So there's actually about 10 different factors, 10 different experiences that we put into programs and 10 experiences that we like to avoid.
Okay.
And when you stack these core 10 experiences, it creates what I call experience escalation, which is kind of an unstoppable momentum from what I call mission to mission accomplished. From someone saying yes to your program, your course, your product, your engagement, all the way to completing that program and getting the core result.
Okay. What are the 10 things?
Yeah. Well, let's start with the first one.
Okay.
Because the first one's super duper important. People cannot win the game if they don't know what winning looks like. Mm-hmm. And so many products feel like it's knowledge transfer or it's skill transfer, where people are just like dumping a bunch of information, but there's no clear outcome.
Okay.
And by clear outcome, it's what I call a mission.
Okay.
And a mission should be so clear that you can almost film someone crossing the finish line of mission accomplished.
Okay.
It's almost binary. You've either done it or you haven't done it. And there's a really easy way to define a clear mission. So I've created this template. I call it the mission possible template.
Okay.
And you may recognize it. It goes like this. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is blank.
So this is the mission for the customer.
Yes.
Okay.
And so what this does, using this terminology, even if you strip out the your mission, should you choose to accept it later on, is that it puts you in the shoes of your customer. What are they going to do, be, feel, have, overcome, or achieve through working with you?
Nice.
Versus from your perspective of what you want to offer, what you want to sell. And even though everyone knows that it's about what people want to buy rather than what you want to sell, so many people are still coming at it based on what they want to sell.
Right.
So simply by using this turn of phrase, even if, like I said, you drop that language afterwards, it puts you in their shoes.
Nice.
So for example, for our Experience Product Masterclass, which is our signature program, teaching people how to do this for their programs, it's your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to design, market, and make $2,000 or a whole lot more from an Experience product in 10 weeks or less.
Nice.
So people instantly know what they're going to do. You can tell whether they've got their result or they haven't gotten the result. And this does a few things. One is it simplifies product creation because anything that does not serve that mission automatically does not belong in the program.
Makes sense.
Right?
Now, you mentioned experience product. Is that a definition?
So basically, we have trademarked a kind of product called an experience product. And it's a product that delivers these 10 core experiences.
Ah, okay.
And it's different from an information product in a number of ways. One is that instead of getting 3% of people to the finish line, experience products get anywhere from 30 to 90% of people across the finish line.
Nice.
So we get 10 to 30 times the results with an experience product. So it's a new kind of product that combines gamification, adult learning theory, user experience, psychology of motivation, to really get people hooked on what they just bought.
Okay. So the first one was mission possible?
Yeah, it's the mission, having a clear mission.
What's the second one?
Well, the second one kind of goes hand in hand with mission in its future self. It's like, what is the picture of someone's life that they're going to realize through your product.
Sure.
Because it's not enough just to say you're going to design a product, you know, and make your money back from the program.
Right.
It's like, what's that really going to do for you? Mm-hmm. And the reason why that matters is because as adults, we need to see the relevance of, you know, doing this work in our lives.
Right.
So a lot of people just assume it's obvious what creating a product is going to do for me in my life. But this isn't just creating a mission, like a future self for the entire program. It's for every single piece of the program. Mm-hmm. So every single piece of content also has a mission and a future self vision. So you've got the one for the entire program, mm-hmm. but every single time someone interacts and engages with me, there's a clear mission for that engagement and a clear future self vision. So people essentially feel like they're winning every single time they engage with me and take any single piece of the program.
So can you give me an example?
Just... Yeah. So for example, you know, core experience number 4 is constant wins. Mm-hmm. So my goal is that every time someone engages with us, they actually are completing an action and they're winning.
Okay.
So every single training has some core action associated with that training. So they're never just consuming content. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing in my world as content for the sake of content.
Okay.
Reason being is people can get content for the sake of content on YouTube, on Google, anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But mine is always applied content. So they're learning, but they're immediately putting that content to use.
Right.
So even if something is mindset based and, you know, in I have a mindset training, the mission, your mission, should you choose to accept it for this particular training, could be to say to yourself that, you know what I mean? Like it could be whether it's a some kind of affirmation, you know, or something along the lines.
Right.
Like, repeat to yourself this. Or post on the Facebook group this,
right?
So even if it's a mindset training, and I don't do a lot of purely mindset trainings, I do that. So your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to come up with your mission, future self vision for your particular program. Mm-hmm. That would be an example. And when someone does that, in our membership site, we allow them to check a box saying that they've completed watching the training, which gives them 1 experience points. And when they've completed the action, they get 2.
Okay.
And it's kind of fun because every single time they check it off, there's some sound effects on the site. It goes, you know, cha-ching, you know, and if they have check it off for an action, it goes cha-ching, cha-ching, and their experience point counter ticks upward.
Okay. Cool.
So we can do leaderboards for the program. We can constantly be saying, okay, great. Here's these students who completed this particular module.
Right.
These students have X points. These students have Y. We can do jump contests. Okay. So nice. Great. We've got a break week now. When you jump X points by the end of this week, we're going to send you a t-shirt.
Right. Like it.
So that's an example of how we can
Those
do that.
Ones.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And what's the next one?
Yes. So we've gone through mission. Mm-hmm. We've gone through future self vision. Before I continue, I want to say that each one of these has an opposite principle.
Okay.
So when you stack them, they create experience escalation. But when you accidentally do the opposite principle, it creates what I call the downward death spiral.
All right.
Where people get stuck, they get frustrated, and they walk away.
DDS, downward yes. death spiral, which is also dentist.
Ooh. They
dentist,
sound...
downward death spiral? Coincidence? I think not.
Probably not. So the opposite of, say, a mission is serving too many masters, mm-hmm. right? So you serve too many masters when your program's trying to deliver so many results. So, okay. For example, the very, very first product that I created went back in like 2012. It was called Message to Money. And I had 1 module about kind of creating your core business strategy, then a module about defining your messaging, then a module about your brand, then a module about your content, mm-hmm. then a module about your products, then a module about your marketing. And every single thing, it was like your entire business system in 1 $500 product.
Right.
And nobody got through this thing. I mean, I think there's 1 person who built her entire business off of it.
Nice.
Right? But other than that, the vast majority of people got stuck because this product was trying to do everything. Yeah. There wasn't a clear outcome.
Okay.
It was just like everything in a box.
Well, but it seemed like there was because, and so to defend you against yourself, it was to get them in business,
yes.
right? That was the outcome. But that outcome is a big outcome.
It's a big outcome.
It has lots of subcomponents that go into... Right, making
it's
it
way
up.
Too big for a $500 product. Maybe for a year-long
program.
It's a
great distinction,
program.
Though, for people who yeah. are watching or listening to think about that maybe your end result is too big.
Yes.
Right?
And it also relates to market sophistication. Mm-hmm. So when you have so many people selling a product about just building your business in a box or right. whatever it happens to be, how is your be-all, end-all business building program going to be different from somebody else's be-all, end-all business building program?
Right, exactly.
And it also relates to duration. And it also relates to, you know, the amount of time they're in the program. We have these year-long mentorship programs that we also experientify. Mm-hmm. But the outcome of those mentorship programs would be, for example, to jump to the next stage of business growth. Mm-hmm. So it might be to earn back your investment in the program, if not double your investment, and progress to the next stage of business growth. So okay. I define stages of business growth, like Blue Sky, Call Me, Next Level, List Build, and Authority.
Okay.
So they basically jump to the next stage. So their business model kind of progresses in the program. So even though it's a year-long program, there's still a very clear outcome where they know where they've won the game.
So we were at wins, I think, and then yes. moving on to the next one, which yeah. was what?
So actually going back to three. Three is bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. And bird's eye view is they always know where they are and where they're going. It's constantly positioning someone on the journey.
Okay.
But this isn't just like, okay, you're here, now you're in video three, now you're in video four, now you're in video five. It's more looking at where they are in relationship to the overall win state.
Okay.
Right? So people need to be seeing, okay, here's how far you've come, here's how far you have to go, here's how much progress you made, here's, you know, how much you still have to do. Mm-hmm. And they need to feel like they know exactly where they are.
Okay.
Right? In the program, but they also have to feel like there's a core framework that's guiding them. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, the opposite phenomenon is what I call headlights in the fog,
right?
Where you can't see mm-hmm. more than a few feet in, front, of you.
Yeah.
They need to know exactly where they're going at all moments in time. And they also have to be able to see the core framework that's underlying the program.
Okay.
Like, what is your methodology? And what's the exact system that you're going to get used to get them from mission to mission accomplished?
Got it.
Right? So if they don't know the way that you're going to deliver them to the outcome, you're just asking them to trust you.
Right.
Trust me, I've got this covered.
Right.
So you have to reveal your hand a little bit. You have to show them the exact process and framework that you're using to get them from mission to mission accomplished, and then show them every step along the way, you know, where they are in relationship to that. And that yeah. creates a huge amount of trust.
That makes sense.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. And the opposite of, say, future self is what I call the how hole.
Okay.
So the how hole, and we're getting into a lot of different distinctions. I usually share only a few in an interview. I'm happy to share as many as you want. But the how hole is basically like where people just get stuck in the how. Mm-hmm. And without a clear
Tony
motivating
calls it
why.
The tyranny of the how, which I think is, I like the tyranny of it because it's like you get stuck by it, right? How literally stops you from doing what you need to get done.
Exactly. And so without a compelling enough future self vision for every single piece of your program, mm-hmm. it's so easy to fall into the how hole. You know, an example, for example, is also one of my students was doing a program about getting your music licensed on television shows and movies. Mm-hmm. And the very, very first step of the program was to do all the legal paperwork. And it's like, you know, the worst possible place
yeah.
to drop someone.
No kidding.
So, for example, even looking at future self from a structural standpoint, what right. I would recommend as the very first training there is come up with your dream 50 list, for example. And you could provide in that training, here are the top shows if you've got like death metal music, you know, here are the top shows right. if you've got, you know, yeah, what do they call it? Like, you know, the a musical or whatever mm-hmm. it happens to be. And then have you put together your dream 50 list of if you were on any of these shows, the whole program would be a big win.
Right.
Right? That's a way to actually start the program that's creating a powerful future self.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus let's do all the legal paperwork to get you eligible to be on these shows.
It's actually funny. And it's a great example because so many people do that, right?
They do.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think so many people do that when they're getting started that they feel like they have to have a logo and business cards and monogram shirts and all this other stuff before they get started. And it's like, that's not the thing that's important, right?
No.
Yeah. So, but that's the easy stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's easy for her probably because she was used to the agreements to start with that as opposed to some of the other stuff.
Well, the reason people start there is a lot of times people start their programs or their services in either the most boring place, which is that one, or the most difficult place because they're thinking about it as a linear process. Mm-hmm. So core principle number 9 is what I call unstoppable momentum. Mm-hmm. And this is where you kind of sand down the edges for someone. So to build unstoppable momentum, you've got to start with small, simple actions and wins that ramp up to larger actions and larger wins. So the more challenging stuff is not at the beginning. It's somewhere towards like the middle. And then if you do something really challenging, you've got to think about the rhythm. You might go and do something easier afterwards, right? So when you look at unstoppable momentum and you understand what's called the skill challenge ratio, which is that people get into a flow state and they feel most alive when they're being challenged, but challenged to the right degree. Mm. So the actual percentage is 4%. So when you're 4% challenged over your level of skill, it creates like a leaning forward.
Okay.
It creates momentum. It creates excitement.
Right.
But when you're like at 40% challenged every interaction, it's like, I can't do this. It creates overwhelm. Now, right. A little bit of overwhelm is necessary for growth.
Sure.
And there are going to be times in a program where things have to probably go beyond 4% level of challenge,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can start people out at the easy challenge and kind of ramp them up to more challenging stuff, they're going to develop self-confidence and momentum as they go versus dropping them into something that's either challenging or really boring or is going to leave the vast majority of people behind.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
So now how did you get into all this stuff?
Yeah, well, I got into it because I was leaving my students and customers behind unintentionally.
Okay.
So a lot of times this is not intentional. It's just as experts, we're not necessarily curriculum designers. We're not necessarily facilitators. We just learned how to do something really well ourselves.
Right.
But there's a massive difference between being able to do something really well yourself
mm-hmm.
and being able to get someone else a result.
So you built the business in a box kind of thing to start with, right?
I did build a business in
a box thing. Message to money?
Yes.
Message to money. And that was your very first kind of foray into that world, right?
Yep.
And so what was the experience?
Yeah. So I watched people go, you know, buy the program. And they would do, you know, a few videos or a few modules. They'd get stuck. You know, no one ever blamed me for it. But it wasn't that fulfilling. It's like, why aren't people succeeding? Why aren't they finishing? Why don't I have all of these testimonials and case studies and things like that? So I remember asking a friend, and I said, you know, is this common? Are you finding people buying your courses and not going through them, not finishing? And what she told me kind of really put the fire under my butt. And she basically said, well, Marisa, maybe some people aren't meant to succeed. And that just went against all of my beliefs.
Right, yeah.
Because I believe everybody is meant to succeed, given the right training, given the right environment, given the right set of circumstances.
Sure.
And so that kind of challenged me to say, well, what could I do to basically stack the odds in people's favor? What could I do to basically rig the game in a way that they could win?
Mm.
I can't do the work for them. Mm. I can't take responsibility for people, but how can I become as responsible to them as possible?
Right.
So I just started getting obsessed with, where in the world are people focusing their attention?
Hmm.
And what are those places doing to grab people's attention?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking at apps, I was looking at games, I was looking at all these places where humans are spending dozens of hours a week, you know, on Facebook or on Instagram, for example.
Right.
And I started doing these initial experiments before I developed my entire methodology. And I found in one of my first experiments, it was just a 5-day program, that over 80% of people completed it, came to every single day, completed it, got the outcome. I was like, wow, this is going really, really well.
Yeah.
So of course, applying it to a longer, more complex program, and if it's like much longer and it's a much bigger result, you're not going to get 90%, but you could still get much more. You could get 30, 40,
50%. Better than three.
Yeah, much better than three, at least 10x better
right.
than three.
Right.
And things kind of came to a head in the summer of 2016. Do you know what happened in the summer of 2016?
What happened?
So Pokemon Go came on the scene.
Okay.
And within the very first month, this game made over $200 million, and it took the world by storm for a very short period of time.
Because it also took the creator by storm. They, didn't,
yes.
they were like, what do we do with this, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So many missed opportunities.
But there was footage of grown adults basically, you know, double parking their cars illegally in the streets, jumping out and chasing these little virtual creatures.
I can tell you that my wife was absolutely hooked on it, and we would, on the way to dinner, which is only about maybe a 10-minute drive from our house, there was a, was it a gym? That was the gym where they hung out? There was a gym, which is where these creatures hung out and you could pick them up, on the way by a trash dumpster in the back of a parking lot of this little shopping center. And so every time that we would drive to dinner, I would have to pull off. I'd have to go slow past a couple places where they hung out and she grabbed them, and then I would go and drive through. And so we're just driving through, you know, at the afternoon through the garbage dumpster area while she's like, oh, I got one. So absolutely familiar with that.
That's hysterical. Yeah. I know, it was wild because my husband and I were in Italy that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we, Pokemon did not go exist when we left. And by the time we reached Rome, our last stop on that trip, like 2 months later, we see this Roman couple in a back alley kind of giggling. And Murray says, Pokemon Go? And then they're like, hee, 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 hee. You know, and even all the way here in a Roman back alley, it was still taking the world by a storm.
So funny.
So when I saw this footage of these grown adults just double parking their car and basically stampeding Central Park, there was thousands of people running through the streets. They were, you know, a craze.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what in the world is going on? But I instantly got a picture in my mind that became very motivating.
Mm.
The picture I got is, what if I could get people so excited about overcoming their greatest, you know, challenges and achieving their biggest goals in life that they're literally running to do it?
Right.
And so ever since then, I've had this vision in my mind of all of those people running to catch little virtual Pokemon and instead running after their biggest goals in life.
I love it.
And that's what I've set about to try to make happen the best of my ability.
And so what are you doing right now to make that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, part of it is obsessively tweaking every single product line that we have.
Okay.
And my latest is looking at actual personality architectures. Mm-hmm. So we've been looking at how to say someone's Colby or someone's wealth dynamics impact their ability to go through a program. Where do I have unconscious biases in my programs that say this is a program that might favor extroverts or people with a star or creator personality because that's me, right? Mm-hmm. So how is my own biases creating exercises or perspective that some people can really succeed with but other people cannot?
Sure.
So if I'm teaching people in business, how can I do the marketer's guide for introverts and mechanics? So people who don't like to go out there and meet people. Mm-hmm. So looking at all the different biases that are naturally built into my programs and how do I look at creating things for other types of people.
Interesting.
So that's just one of the things I'm obsessing about right now.
So how do you adapt that though then? You have all these different types and do you have multiple products or paths within products or how do you do that?
Well, for example, in our year-long mentorship program, I've developed a model I call concierge mentorship. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of concierge mentorship, people actually do Colby and they do wealth dynamics. They meet with their coach. We look at their individual starting point. We look at their natural pace. We look at their strengths and their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. We look at their business model, their business blueprint, and you know, a few different elements to help them craft the right focal point for them right then and there.
Okay.
And this is our year-long program. It's a, you know, it's a five-figure program, and they have a personal coach who's their guide through the program. They have unlimited access to their coach.
Okay.
And I used to do curriculum drops. Like last year, I had the insane, you know, experience of creating 300 experientified trainings. Mm-hmm. And I had everyone go through the same five incubators in the program. The number of people who fell behind, they couldn't take it, it was too much. And I realized it's not about the curriculum. It's not. So I decided to move the curriculum in the year-long program from the foreground of the program to the background.
Okay.
So it becomes a resource rather than the focal point of the program.
Sure.
Now, this is different because it's a year-long program with a broader focus than, say, 6 weeks to 12 weeks is about the maximum that people, I think, can stay on a very specific content or curriculum track.
Okay.
After that, they start to veer.
Okay.
So, you know, we do quarterly meetings with each student here to kind of help them reset their 90-day goals, their 90-day rocks, for example. But what I realized when people couldn't go through the set curriculum at the same pace and everybody's working on different projects and things is instead I took my entire archive of like 600 trainings and I created missions. So in the Blue Sky Mentorship Program, which is for people who are brand new to business making less than $2,500 a month, I created a dozen missions. Hmm. One could be about choosing your niche. Another one could be about getting proficient in one-on-one sales. Another one could be about creating a minimum viable offer, right? Mm-hmm. Getting your first client. And so they can choose missions which unlock curriculum from different programs related to just doing that one thing.
Okay.
And every mission has a series of six milestones. So kind of an emergent set of milestones that goes beyond the individual trainings. So they're working on these milestones along the way.
Okay.
So our next level program that's more advanced has 24 missions. And so the coach can help them choose the right missions for them.
Sure.
Nice. And so now they might do one mission in an entire year or they could do 12, right?
Right.
And it's up to them in terms of the pace they want to go because the goal is to build their business. It's not to consume content.
Right, exactly.
So I have to remember that. And it's so easy for people to become seminar junkies. And knowing that that's human nature, if I can just focus on learning or pretending like I need to do more or learn more before I do more, then, hey, I'm working, right? It looks like I'm taking action and I'm in business, but really it's just the appearance of being in business.
Right.
So I have to remember that. And it's not about them consuming as much of my content as possible. It's about them progressing in their business.
That makes sense. What would you say, what is the biggest challenge that you see with people who are trying to make their customer experience and their completion rate of their programs higher? What's the thing that gets in their way the most?
The biggest thing that gets in the way is what I call the cognitive bias of being an expert, is that most product creators are so in love with their topic And they have such a nuanced degree of understanding, mm-hmm. and they want to like impart that knowledge on their students, clients, and customers. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of people who are not as expert at your topic as you are don't need to know everything or want to know everything.
Got it.
So having a little bit more restraint of just like, what do they really need to know?
How do you balance that?
Well, one thing that I've done in our Experience Product Master class, our signature course, is I actually have created two tracks. I call it the core track and the overachiever track. So, for example, because there are different people coming in at different levels, we have brand newbies who don't know what their business are, and then we have people like Josh Turner who's sending his team through to refine a multi-million dollar product line, mm-hmm. right? So the core track, I say, well, if you have, you know, this program takes a minimum of 7 to 10 hours a week to complete. If that's all the time that you got, you're new, you get easily overwhelmed, you're going to have to exercise some restraint in the kind of product you want to create. Okay. You cannot create the Experience Product Masterclass in 10 weeks working 7 to 10 hours a week.
Right.
So I teach them how to choose maybe a one-on-one or one-to-few product that's a minimum viable product.
Sure.
Right? Now, if you want to make this your full-time job for the next however many 10 weeks, you could create an asset that's an enduring asset in your business that you could actually turn into a seven-figure product line.
Right.
And I've had people do, you know, up to, I think, $400,000 in the 10 weeks of the program from their course who worked obsessively.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to kind of say that if you're brand new and if you only have the 7 to 10 hours a week, just don't even touch, you know, only focus on the core track. Don't even touch the extracurricular track,
okay.
the overachiever track.
That makes
right?
sense.
And so in the overachiever track might be things like designing a product logo, telling your business origin story, coming up with guarantees and bonuses, not necessary for a minimum viable product, right? But it might be necessary if someone wants to do a more advanced product. And so the overachiever track has a completely different point system. I call it triple XPs. I call it porn for overachievers.
Okay.
Instead of going ka-ching, it goes bump, chicka, wah, wah, when people
nice.
Check it off.
Nice.
And so it's like this differentiation. So I try to help people not have that tendency to want to check every box.
Right.
By saying, okay, if you touch that, it's on you, right? Mm-hmm. And if you tell me you're overwhelmed because you're sampling over here from the forbidden fruit, right? Versus, you know, and some people self-identify. They are overachievers. They want the extra content. They want to do absolutely everything. But other people get easily overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of how I wanted to give more because I know that product creation is more complex. Mm-hmm. And I do have people at different levels. But a way that I was able to segment it so people could do as much as they were capable of doing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you mentioned doing the experiences and stuff around Colby and some of the other tests and surveys. Where do you see this going, customer experience, experiencifying everything? Where is it going to be 5 years from now?
Yeah. Well, I think that people really want high-touch, customized experiences. As more and more becomes available just on Google and on YouTube, if you don't have these kinds of value add where you're helping people either through private coaching, done for you services, done with you services, mm-hmm. whatever it happens to be, customizing programs to them,
mm-hmm.
I think people are not going to be spending top dollar for content they could just rip off the web.
For sure. And you're building those out for people now. You'll look at their program and say, hey, here are five opportunities we see that you could turn this into something that's more than just content?
Yeah, I mean, I will consult with people, and we do enterprise-level membership sites for some mm-hmm. people as mm-hmm. well. But the vast majority of people come and either go through one of our workshops or go through our Experience Product Masterclass, so they learn how to do it themselves.
Okay. Yeah. And so for people who would like to get more information about what you do, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a page up at liveyourmessage.com/lunch.
Okay.
Because this is business lunch.
Oh, nice.
Liveyourmessage.com/lunch. And it's a checklist, a cheat sheet of the 10 core experiences that you want to stack in your programs to create experience escalation and get 10 to 30 times the number of people, you know, engaging in your programs mm-hmm. and your services, completing them, getting results, and ultimately wanting to refer you and buy from you again. And you'll also learn the 10 experiences you want to avoid like the plague if you don't want 97% of people to give up on your programs.
Nice. That's
so
fantastic.
I put that up at liveyourmessage.com/lunch.
Liveyourmessage.com.
Yes.
/lunch. So for you, what is next? Is there a product? Is there a book? Is there...
Yeah. So I want to work on a book for sure. So I consider myself a writer. I love to write. And I've probably written 10 or 15 or 20 books worth of content, if not a lot more than that. But I've never written it in the form of a book.
Okay.
And when I look at a book, I feel like it's got to be one of those things. I say, I won't write a book unless it's a damn good read. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing that you pick up and you don't want to put down. I won't do one of those business card books where it's just like, I got on the top of Amazon. I mean, nobody cares, right? Yeah,
agree.
It's got to be a work
that... I'm a bestseller. And everybody else is too.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, as someone who is a total nerd in high school, I read 100 novels a year, 2 years in a row.
Wow.
And
what was your favorite one?
Oh, that's a really hard one
to
say.
I know, that's why I ask it.
You know, there was a bunch that I loved.
I'll let you say 3 favorites. How about that?
Okay. I loved The Painted Bird by Josie Kosinski.
Okay.
About a young boy in Germany during the Holocaust. I love a book called Man in the Holocene by Max Frisch.
Okay.
It's about someone losing his mind.
Interesting.
Basically.
All right.
I loved Hunger by Newt Hampson.
Okay.
All right.
I like it. That's good.
Okay. Who is a Nobel Prize winning author.
So now your book will be coming out?
Yeah, it'll be coming out maybe next year, maybe the year after.
Okay.
But I want it to be just an incredible read because I believe a book is a different format than a course or a video.
For sure.
And you have to really relish the format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at someone like, there's a literary movement called the Ulipo Lipo that came out of Europe. And you have people like Italo Calvino, for example, really kind of experimenting with the form of a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I would want to experiment with the form of the book and experientify the book as well.
Nice.
A lot of people ask me about how to experientify books. So right. I want to just be really radically experimenting with the form. And
what would be a couple of ideas on how you might do that?
Well, I mean, you can go back to the choose your own adventure format that I think would be really fun in a business book,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
To have different outcomes based on choices that you make.
Right.
So that could be an example.
Okay.
Right? The interaction between the book and, say, online platforms, sure. for example, could be another thing.
Okay.
Right?
I like it.
I love the idea of expanding the book with user-contributed content. So it mm-hmm. goes beyond the static form into a more dynamic form.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of a mixture between... I'm always fascinated by the play between offline and online.
Mm-hmm.
So I've wanted to do a series of billboards that then go back to, say, books or websites, for example.
Hmm.
So there's a few things that
I like it. That sounds fun. Okay. So again, liveyourmessage.com/lunch. Any other places on the socials or other places you want people to find you?
I'm on all the socials
yeah.
under Live Your Message. And my main website's just liveyourmessage.com.
Okay. And podcast or anything like that?
No podcast yet.
All right. Plans?
I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Thinking about it. Again, it's like I would want to do something really interesting with the format. Because
mm-hmm.
I kind of believe we're in an age where the best idea, the best marketing, the best product, the best delivery wins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to just do something for the sake of doing it versus having that very clear vision and yeah. differentiation.
Or doing it because everybody else is doing it. And
exactly.
you're afraid that if you don't do it, you're just...
Gonna miss
doing the
boat.
The thing. Yeah, exactly.
But then if you're doing it just because everybody else is doing it the same way that everybody else is doing it,
it's not special,
you're gonna
it's
be
not
ignored.
Differentiating. Yeah.
So I don't do something unless I have a clear, compelling idea. So for example, I did a summit series years ago called the Superhero Summits.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of became the summit series that kind of informed all the summit series in the past.
Nice.
Like in the future since then. And someone asked me to do a summit. I said, I'm not going to do a summit until I have that idea that makes it really radical.
Right.
And the Superhero Summits is we turned every... speaker and every guest into a superhero, right? And it was the first summit streamed on Google Hangouts on air.
Oh, wow.
Before they'd all been teleseminars. And then I did the first like live interactive video summit. So we had live audiences of 300 to 800 people a day.
Wow.
Yeah, doing these. And, you know, I was dressed as a superhero. Everyone had these superhero cartoons. We did playbooks and people would get extra pages of the book when they came out live. And this really impacted the next generation of summits, but it had a core idea that made it super easy for me. On my very first summit, I had 3,000 people on my list at the time. And I got Andy Jenkins and Don Crowther and James Wedmore
yeah.
and all these people to participate because they all wanted to be turned into a superhero, right?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. So did you turn them into known superheroes? Like you kind of assigned them a thing?
I did. Like it's interesting because we actually premiered Ask Method, we premiered Video Boss, we premiered these products on the summit,
okay,
which was kind of crazy
yeah.
looking back on it later. But I think Ryan Levesque was Bruce Lee because
okay.
he really believes in strong like bamboo and flexible or whatever
like
it is.
I like it.
Andy was the Viking, of course.
Viking,
right?
Yeah, because he started selling yeah. swords online.
Jason Fladlin was Superman because he's just the best.
I like it. Nice.
Yes, he likes to be the best.
That's great.
You know, and so we just had different characters.
And
based
who are
on,
you?
My husband chose it. He chose this really booby superhero. You know? So it was like, it's based off the Black Widow, basically.
Okay. All right,
Black Widow. I thought about going with Wonder Woman, but what I was worried is that the superhero character would eclipse my personal brand.
Interesting.
So I chose a more generic superhero. Yeah. So then it was more me in a superhero suit rather than me, Wonder Woman, and then people start calling me Wonder Woman.
Very, very smart.
Don Crowther was the Incredible Hulk.
Don Crowther was the other one I wanted to find out. Crowther is the Hulk. That's interesting.
Because he's so skinny and tall, but he became really bulky.
That's pretty funny. Well, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. And again, it's liveyourmessage.com/lunch.
Yes.
Thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time to drive down here and be with us.
Absolutely. It was fun.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Fraser. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.